Hey, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Captain Hunter's Podcast, the podcast that is dedicated towards bridging the divide between the police and the communities that they serve. I want you all to notice that there is a key phrase in there, and that is that the police actually serve the community. I think a lot of times that notion gets lost, not only with the police officers, but a lot of times it gets lost with politicians. So we have to remember that they actually are there to serve and to protect us. So, and we appreciate all that they are doing. Right now, we are in kind of a crisis mode as I record this. We understand that there is a serious pandemic that's going on, and it's really kind of crippled us. And I don't think that any of us have ever seen anything like this in our lifetime. Even as we look back, you know, when have we had movie theaters shut down and stores and been on restrictions, in unnecessary stores been forced to close. But we understand that this is all for our protection, and we appreciate those who are trying to make the best decisions for us and for the good of the community at large. So today we're going to have a special guest as we're going to look at some of the roles that law enforcement is taking in this situation to help us with the pandemic. And that is a good friend of mine, my former chief of police from the Waterbury Police Department, and the current chief of police in West Hartford, Vernon Riddick Jr. And I really appreciate him coming on the podcast. Good friend of mine. He was a mentor of mine. How he conducted himself, his integrity, his intelligence, and everything like that. And I really looked up to him as a big brother, maybe even as a father figure. Really, really smart man. I really appreciate him coming on the show. A lot of the good points that you hear about the show are really come from him with his suggestions. So a lot of people give me feedback, and I'm not going to listen to all of them, but certainly Mr. Riddick, Chief Riddick, is one of those persons that I certainly do, whose advice I certainly will follow. Before we get into the interview with Chief Riddick, I just want to remind you all to continue to rate, to subscribe, and to share. And I put this out before, and I want to put it out again. If you could just send me an email about how you're finding out about the show, whether you know, you're finding out through LinkedIn or through Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, how are you finding out about the show? And this is really important for me to understand, you know, who's listening, how you're listening. Are you downloading the episodes? Are you just streaming it from the website? This is all very important information for me to get so I can, you know, understand how to market myself better and make sure that this information is getting out there. And once again, I'm going to ask you all to rate, subscribe, and share. And I think the biggest part of that is to do all three of those, right? To rate it highly, right? The higher the ratings on Apple Podcasts, for example, then the more likely it's going to be found. Subscribe, you know, the more subscriptions, that's what drives analytics, you know, how many subscribers you have. And share, right? And share through Facebook, share through email, share through word of mouth. If you have one of my business cards or flyers or whatever, you know, if you have a conversation with someone and you're talking about police stuff, well, just say, hey, listen, you know, there's this guy that I listen to. His name is Captain Hunter. He's got a podcast and he talks about this kind of thing. And, you know, he's not only talking about police stuff, but he talks about, you know, he talked about the Native American mascot controversy. He's got episodes dealing with the community and what the community can do and should do in order to better themselves. So why don't you check this guy out? So I would really appreciate it if you guys did that. That way this information can get out there. Without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, let's get into the episode. And today we're going to talk about, you know, law enforcement's response and their role in this crisis. Somebody called me the other day and was asking me, you know, are we under martial law? And what does this mean? And lockdown? The police going to be pulling us over? They see us driving around at 10 o'clock at night. And so, you know, in order to kind of quell these types of concerns, in order to kind of quiet that storm, I wanted to reach out to, you know, an active member of law enforcement and find out, you know, what they're getting from their town leadership, city leadership, and of course, which is coming from the state. Truth be told, I did reach out to a couple of other state agencies in other states to make this not just about Connecticut thing, but no one got back to me. But, you know, sometimes that's just the way that it is. And so, but we do have a chief here today. He's going to really be a calming and intelligent voice in this time of insanity almost, you know. So I really appreciate, once again, Vern Riddick Jr. coming on the show. Just a little bit about Chief Riddick's bio. He is the current chief of the West Hartford Police Department in Connecticut, former chief of the Waterbury Police Department in Waterbury, Connecticut, a bachelor's degree from Tufts, a master's degree from Post University. Really, really smart, intelligent guy. Loves the Lord. He's very faithful in his faith with God and in his dedication to church. And so a good man of good integrity, father, grandfather, husband, all that kind of good stuff, you know, good role model. So with enough of me going on about that, here is the interview between myself and Chief Vernon Riddick. I am on with a good friend of mine, Chief Vernon Riddick Jr., formerly the police chief of the Waterbury Police Department and current chief of the West Hartford Police Department in Connecticut. Thank you so much for being on Captain Hunter's podcast.
You're welcome, Cap. Good to talk to you again. It's a pleasure and it's an honor.
Truly, the honor is all mine. You're definitely a mentor to me while we were working, and continue to be a mentor to me now. So thank you so much for being here. And please forgive me for taking so long to get you on the podcast. You really should have been one of the persons I called first. But I want to have my ducks in a row before I brought a big man like you on. And I mean that literally. You're 6'6", and I'm so I wanted to do this right. So
yeah, that was a good cover, Cap. Very good cover. I'll give you a pass, but we'll talk offline.
All right, everyone, I'm in trouble again. So I wanted to have you on because of this contagion that we got going on, this coronavirus that's going on, and I know that law enforcement is struggling with this and dealing with this. So before we get into that, can you just tell us? I want to talk to you just a little bit about what it's like to be a chief. I mean, obviously times like this are difficult, they're hard, they're challenging, but you know, we in law enforcement, we kind of strive for this kind of stuff. And we live for it. So tell us about the excitement of this, and if we can use that term, right? There's a challenge to it. So let's talk about that a little bit.
Well, I guess I will start with, have you ever heard the adage, be careful what you ask for because you might get it?
Right.
I guess that's what I would consider for a police chief. I think for anybody, when you start at the lower end of the spectrum of your profession, and you work your way and you're blessed enough to make it to the top, there's a feeling of accomplishment just because you set a goal and you achieved it. And, you know, when you achieve that overall goal, of course, there's many milestones in between the beginning and the end. It is challenging. You know, when you find yourself at the top of the heap, responsible for, in Waterbury, it was 300 officers, and now in West Hartford, 132. And not to mention the entire town in the city of Waterbury, you're talking about 110,000 people for a population, and West Hartford, approximately 65,000 people. It's an awesome responsibility. You know, each person is different. Each chief is different. I rely upon my faith in God to direct me and to guide me, to make decisions. And then you have your natural abilities of just, you know, studying, reading, trusting your command staff, listening to your people. Listening to the public, and at the same time understanding the political component of this, of your boss, which whether it could be a mayor or a town manager, and just working out all the logistics of that, and then try to be a husband, you know, a father, grandfather, you know, and the like. It's a lot, but you know, I wouldn't change it one iota. I love it, and it gives me something to do each and every day for the past 27 years.
Nice. Well, how long do you plan to continue on with that? 27 years is kind of a long time. How long do you plan to keep going on?
I still love it. I think as long as I have the energy, the fire, and the desire, I'll continue to go forward. Like anything else, there is an expiration date at some time. But, you know, I think you can relate to this. You know, as I look back, I started my career in 1993. It doesn't seem like it's been 27 years. I'm in my 27th year of law enforcement. It really does seem like yesterday. It's just amazing how fast time goes by.
Right. Talk about the challenges, if there are any, and I know there are some. So talk about the challenges of being a black chief.
I think the challenges of being a black chief are the same as any other chief. There's different nuances There's self-imposed pressure, the pressure of not wanting to fail, not just for yourself, but for your people. And you know, whether that's real or perceived, in my mind, it doesn't matter because you still have to produce. So that means you feel you have to work, you know, 2 to 3 times harder than your colleagues. You feel like you can never make a mistake, understanding that that standard is impossible to achieve, but you try to achieve it. You feel like you're standing in the gap for your entire race, your entire community as a role model, which you are, but the weight of that is not just your responsibility. You were there stepping on the shoulders of others. So I think a lot of it, at least for me, is just personally putting weight on you. And let's state the obvious. You know, in our community, the African-American community, there's been an adversarial relationship between law enforcement and the community for hundreds of years. And trying to change that and to come up in that profession, and on the other side, the duality of not being black enough for your community and not being blue enough at times for your work environment, that can be a struggle. And for some, it's insurmountable. So you just take bits and bites and just every day just strive to be better.
That was well said. That was very well said. Not black enough for your community and blue enough for your coworkers. As far as the black community, let's dig into that a little bit. You know, sometimes people will refer to us as, you know, the other side, sellouts. What do you say to that? And I think that that's silly and foolish, but I mean, how do we answer that? How do we get them to know that we are just as concerned about the issues that go on, not only in law enforcement, but just life in the United States in general?
And I'll use my words carefully. You know, words are cheap sometimes. It's what you do. What do you stand for? And to have someone else speak on your behalf, that's what it's all about. Yeah, I've been called sellout. I've been called Uncle Tom, and I'm sure that I speak for many other black African-American officers nationwide who've been in that situation. But the bottom line is, you know, one thing I liked about, and I'm answering your question in a roundabout way, you know, one thing I love about Martin Luther King is, you know, he used the system to expose the system. Mm. Yes, the threat of having Malcolm over there was helpful.
Look, it's me or him. And, what do y'all want?
You know, so that was helpful. But, you know, Dr. King was astute enough, he was wise enough, he was smart enough to understand that to galvanize the nation to understand what we as black people were going through, you had to use the established system to say, hey, all I want is what's here. Mm. I want the same thing that you want. And by utilizing the system to expose it, that's what helped in people, you know, sticking dogs at people for just exercising their rights, right. Putting hoses on people for just exercising their rights. That's what helped push forth that. And, you know, he's a martyr. I there's no doubt in my mind that he knew he was going to die, and he went forward. So when you keep that in mind, that's what I use. It's like, you know what? It's easy to stand on the sidelines and say, well, I don't like police officers. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, if you don't like law enforcement, a police officer, how do you expect to change it from the outside? You got to get inside, roll up your sleeves, and take these jobs, apply yourself, and try to get promoted and make some change. And what you're going to find, and I think you'll probably echo this, Larry, because you and I have had many conversations over the year, what you find is some of your own perceptions as an African-American will be changed once you're inside because you see things a little differently. You understand that many of these non-African-Americans, whether it's Hispanic or whether it's white, you see people put their lives on the line for people they don't know and maybe even sometimes don't even like, but you see that.
Right.
So that helps you to just to go forward.
Right. Has there ever been an instance in which your loyalty about being blue enough has come into question?
Has anyone actually walked up and said that to my face? Probably not. Well, I won't say probably not. That has never happened. But has information been given to me through third parties? Yes. Has there been people that thought that I was too much in favor of the community or doing too much for the community, maybe not understanding or doing enough for the officers? yes, there's been that conversation. But some of that, Larry, as you know, is just the problem and the difficulties of being a chief, period. Mm. But you add to that being an African-American chief. It is tough at times. It really, really is. But at the end of the day, you have to be focused on doing your job, doing it well, and taking care of the community, taking care of the police officers, and just doing the right things for the right reason every single day.
I think it's so incredible that, you know, and that we've come so far, as you mentioned, you know, the days of MLK and Malcolm were in the 1960s. And here we are, 2020, still talking about this dichotomy of, you know, are you blue enough? Are you black enough? And this, it's just crazy that, as you mentioned, we just want what's here. We just want what's right. And we don't, and a lot of times, I remember one time we had a conversation, I think it was after both you and I had taken the sergeant's test, and there was some question as to whether we had gotten extra points. And we were like, listen, we don't want anything extra. I don't want extra 5 points because I'm black. And it was so insulting to you. It was insulting to me. We were both insulted that this was going on and people were thinking this way, that we want something extra or more. We just want whatever, just level the playing field, just level the playing field, and we'll all go from there.
I agree 1,000%. You know, it's hard to change some of that, but I think you make change, you know, one day at a time, one interaction at a time. You know, standing on your integrity, standing on your morals, standing on your work ethic, you know, that means a lot. It really, really does. And you can change some minds by doing that. People are going to be ignorant no matter what. And I learned a long time ago, and, you know, I think all of us with our parents, especially my father, who's my role model, he just says, one thing he said to me a long time ago, he said, let me tell you something, Vern. And I think I was in eighth grade or going to high school. He said, if you want to be a leader, everybody can't like you. It took me many, many years to understand that and to really, it was very profound. I wasn't astute enough at that time to understand it, but over the years, I got it. And what he meant by that, as we talked over the years, is, you know, true leaders, true people who make change, they do what's right sometimes because of their moral compass, but sometimes they have that vision. A leader has a vision that others don't see. You have to be willing to walk that walk and bring that vision into fruition that others might not see. And many times with a vision comes change. And as you know, people don't like change. So if everyone's always patting you on the back, if everyone's always smiling at you, and no one's really upset with you, what change have you impacted? What have you done differently in somebody's life? And I've really, over the years, really took that to heart. Doesn't mean they have to hate you, but they should respect you. I don't have to like you, but they should respect you.
Well said. I like that. I like that. So let's get into what I wanted to have you on for, and that was to talk about the I got a phone call the other day, and someone had asked me about you know, sheltering in place and what that meant and what law enforcement is going to do, and do they need to get a note from their job saying that they can be driving around. So Connecticut and a number of states have implemented shelter in place, and really they've asked for people and businesses to shut down, close down. So can you tell us and dispel any misinformation? We're not under martial law. We're not going to be arrested and pulled over, necked out of our car.
Well, we were at a very challenging time in all of our lives. I am 53. I'll be 54 in October. And I can't think of a time, you know, outside of 9/11. And even then it was different because you had an enemy. Right. Here you have a virus that it's hard to fight. It's not a natural enemy that we're used to. Our systems aren't set up for this. Getting back to the executive order that the governor had put out, the sheltering place is, you know, non-essential businesses aren't open and they have to be closed. And it's our job in law enforcement to make sure that they stay closed. It's our job in law enforcement to continue to assist the public and educate the public, as well as the town and officials and state and local, even federal officials, to assist with that. You know, we have to exercise common sense. You know, the law is not saying that you have to stay in your house. You know, what they are saying is that when you come out of your house, social distancing, you know, that's the buzzword right now. Stay 6 feet away from your neighbor. doesn't mean you stay 6 feet away from your wife or your girlfriend, because you know that's gonna be a problem.
They might,
you
know, some wives might want that. Huh?
yeah, that's absolutely right. So we have to change the behavior. So we, you know, the governor has encouraged people to get out for walks. The governor has encouraged people to go to your local park and walk, but he's discouraging, and we are discouraging, groups of people congregating together. You know, groups of 10 or more is a violation of the governor's executive order, and it is a felony charge. Now, we're probably not going to charge anybody with a felony, Class D felony. You know, there's other things you can do. It's a soft approach at this point. You know, you want voluntary compliance, you know, verbal warnings, you know, and the like. But you have to understand, we are doing these things for the preservation of life. And it's tough. You know, Cap, you can definitely relate to this. You know, throughout your career, what's the thing that we always try to do? Engage the public. We're trying to get our youth to go to the parks and play basketball, play baseball, play football. Now what we're trying to do is tell them, oh, you can't play basketball. No, don't go to the soccer field and congregate with 10 or more. You know, just do a walk up with groups of two or three. That's counterintuitive for us as law enforcement, to shift for us and for the public. It's like, well, what do you want us to do? You know, we are, part of our life is socializing with others, not to be isolated. So it's tough. It's a huge shift, but it's a challenge we're up for, and for, again, for the goal of preservation of life.
I think that, as you mentioned, that is very much what many people, and including myself, would see as problematic. If there's a group of kids, you know, a 5-on-5 basketball game going on, and an officer who does not have the presence of mind, the wisdom, the sensitivity goes up to them and tells them to disperse. Next thing you know, an argument can break out. And next thing you know, there's backups being called and mace is flying and all kind of stuff. So I would hope that officers would have some common sense, as you're saying, to make sure that we are not exacerbating the problem and locking 16 and 17 year olds up for nonsense.
No, that's a defeat. And as you know, I think many times when it comes down to arresting a situation like that, you've lost the battle if you have to arrest someone. Also understand the operational implications of a hands-on arrest. Mm-hmm. Now you're going to arrest these 16 and 17 year olds in a COVID-19 society and bring them back to your lockup and now potentially contaminate lockup and contaminate that vehicle. No one wants that. So right. We actually put out a special order and directives, you know, requiring our officers to give verbal warnings, to give disbursements several times if we have to, with the exception being if you have repeat offenders or people who just blatantly are saying, I'm not going to comply with this request, then we'll be forced to take further action. But we're trying to do everything we possibly can not to make an arrest. An arrest is a loss. An arrest, in my opinion, is another avenue, a direction towards a contamination and continuing this COVID-19 pandemic.
Do officers have the ability to write an infraction ticket or something besides the physical taking into custody arrest?
They do. And that's what we've instructed them to do on a case-by-case basis. But I want to make sure it's clear for you and your audience. Our goal is voluntary compliance. Last resort is a misdemeanor summons. Last resort is an infraction. Last resort is an in-custody arrest. We're not trying to do that. That is not our goal at all. And it is only for those people who just totally refuse to listen or compromise and to work with us that will escalate.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So before we had talked about some of the changes, and I believe you said there was like 40 changes that you as officers are making. And I know that many frontline persons, doctors, nurses, paramedics, firefighters, those who are on the front line, those first responders, have to really make some serious adjustments. Can you talk about some of the adjustments that law enforcement is making to deal with this problem?
Yes. First is a shift in our mentality. And again, you can relate to this. We're used to being the fixers. We're used to where there's danger to go in, putting our lives on the line for the safety and security of someone else. We have to shift and change our mentality, Cap. You know, we have to treat this like a hazmat situation. If you remember from back in the day, they would call the police officer the canaries because we'd run in and get contaminated and have to get saved by the firefighters, you know. But that's how we're treating this. You know, you go to a domestic situation, obviously, if it's a hot call, you run right in. But if you have the opportunity to slow it down for a second to ask some questions before you enter a house or have an interaction, that's what we're trying to do. It goes back to when you're in a plane and, you know, they tell you if the oxygen mask come down to put the oxygen mask on yourself first and then your family member or your children. We're not used to doing that in law enforcement. We're used to going in and sacrificing ourselves and putting ourselves on the line and then worrying about it afterwards to save somebody else. With this pandemic, we can't do that. We can't afford to have 30% of our police department affected. We can't afford to have 50% of our police department being contaminated with this virus. That'll devastate our PD, it'll devastate our response. So that's a huge, significant shift with that. Our communications division are screening calls, every single call for COVID, asking if somebody in the house has a fever, asking if they're coughing, difficulty breathing. Again, this is notwithstanding the emergency calls for an assault or a heart attack. We'd have to do that. Secondly, at least in the town of West Hartford, the police department is the first responders. We have swapped off with the fire department because they have paramedics that are part of part of the fire department. So they now have become the first responders, and we will supplement them and provide scene security. Believe it or not, Cap, there's been occasions where people have stolen these N95 masks out of the back of ambulances.
Wow.
That show up. Yeah, it's crazy. They put them out there on the black market. You can't make it up.
Yo, man, I got the stuff, man. I got the stuff, man.
Listen, I wish I was making this up. I really did.
Yo, straight from the ambulance, man. And it's hot. What you gonna do, man?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it's a sad state. You know, man's inhumanity to man, the age-old question. So that's difficult. So we have to make sure we take care of that. Even getting to keeping the 6 feet of distance when we show up on a call for a larceny call or a burglary call. You know, we're notifying the complainant in advance that when the officer gets there, you know, we're not being rude, but we might not go inside your house. We might have you meet us outside of the house and conduct our interviews 6 feet away. Again, as you know, that's counter to everything we've been taught in law enforcement. We were never taught to do that. We've instituted our ICS model, incident command structure for the entire town, you know, screening calls. We have cleaning kits that were given every cruiser, every police officer. We have decon bags for our police officer. We have a decon location in one of our local high schools in case we get contaminated, where an officer can go or a firefighter can go and take their clothes off and get deconned and scrub down and get a new set of clothes. We're conducting roll calls outside, you know, up in our upper ramp garage and conducting that way. Again, social distancing. We are no longer having our command staff meetings in the same room. We're now doing it over WebEx or Zoom and other, you know, conference calls, Everbridge. So, you know, that interaction, that face-to-face interaction, you're not getting anymore because we have to do things differently. In West Hartford, we've implemented a telephone response unit. You remember that from the old Waterbury days?
I do.
Yes. So we're doing that now. So there's a lot of things that we're doing differently. We've had a couple officers who have traveled in from out of the country who are currently at a 14-day quarantine. As of today, I've extended that so people will just leave the state. So when they come back, it'll be a 14-day quarantine with pay, not admin duty, just to ensure we don't contaminate the rest of our police force. So just a few of the things, you know, that we're doing. I can go on and on. There's several more, but I don't want to bore you or your audience. I can, you know, answer some questions. But the biggest thing, Cap, is just a shift in our mentality. You know, one thing, the Yale police chief, and I think you might have him on relatively soon. You know, he has three things. So I don't want to steal, you know, his mantras here, but it's life safety, incident management, and protection of property. So if you have him on, I'll allow him to talk about that. But our perception of that has changed. Now, one thing you remember, you know, back in the day, if an incident, you know, the FD responds, PD responds, and the ambulance, and then we all huddle around and talk afterwards. Well, you don't do that now. You know, that huddle, that huddle can contaminate 6, 7, 8 people.
Right.
So now, you know, accident scene, you have fluids, ambulance, PD, fire. So there's a lot of things we have to be very cognizant of our social interaction.
How long do you anticipate this, these types of measures taking place? And I know from a management standpoint, we probably hope that we never go back to standing around huddling, but how long do we, how long do we anticipate these types of measures going on?
As needed. We have a continuity operations plan in place. We have a plan, and we have a 10% reduction on our workforce. We have a plan. If a 30% reduction on our workforce, we have a plan, you know, 50%, you know, so on and so forth. So we don't see an end in sight at this point, but we believe there will be an end. So we're prepared to do this as long as we need to do it.
Very good. Do you have any advice for persons who may feel that they are not getting the services, right? Because some people are so used to, you know, officers being officer friendly, going into houses. What would you say to any citizen who may be worried about the rollback, scale back of police services?
Unprecedented times take unprecedented measures. That's what we're doing right now. We are adjusting to things that we weren't trained to do. Our lobby, we have signs up in our lobby that we only take walk-ins for emergencies. I mean, Cap, you remember that back in the day. Imagine that you only could come into the police lobby for an emergency. We've closed down our records division. That personnel is working remotely with their VPN in off their laptops. So this is our temporary new normal. These are measures that have to be taken for the preservation of life. That is the prism that it has to be viewed to. We are not going to be rude. We're not being disrespectful. We are trying to save lives. And this is the best avenue, the best behavior, the best actions that we can take to make sure we preserve life and save lives. That's what we're trying to do.
Very good.
Have patience. We need patience. Have patience with us.
Right. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I truly, truly appreciate it. I think that's all the questions that I have. I really appreciate you coming on. And thank you so much for what you've been doing for the past 27 years. It's been a great honor. It's truly a great honor knowing you. And I really appreciate all that you have done and the influence that you have been in my life. And thank you so much for coming on Captain Hunter's podcast.
You're welcome. And thanks for having me. And I enjoy your podcast. You're doing a great job. So keep up the good work. Excellent. You know, thanks very much, Cap. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Take care.
All right. Take care.
I want to thank Chief Riddick for coming on Captain Hunter's podcast. Once again, truly a privilege and an honor. And I would ask that the public do exactly what he said, and that is have some patience with the officers. It's not like we want to do this. It's not like the officers want to not provide the best services possible. And that goes for the firefighters and EMT personnel as well. But this, obviously, as he said, these extreme times call for extreme measures. And so just be patient with them. A lot of great interviews still coming up, and I truly appreciate you all taking this ride with me and with us as we look to bridge that divide between the police and the communities that they serve. And thank you so much once again to Chief Riddick and coming in and helping to hopefully ease some of the tensions and what's going on in people's minds, understanding the police are not looking to just arrest people. They are trying to find a more diplomatic, more sensitive and more patient approach in dealing with people. And as the mayor, as different mayors and the governors have said all over, they're looking for voluntary compliance, right? Don't force the hands of the police. And that's right. This podcast is about bringing everyone together. So don't force the hands of the police. The police don't want to be arresting people. They don't want to bring people into the booking, into lockup, and risk exposing themselves and other persons to this pandemic. Don't force their hand. Be compliant. Voluntary compliance is the best measure at this point and at this time. So let's get through this together. Let's be patient. Stop buying up all the toilet paper. Let's get through this like civilized human beings that we know that we are. Please make sure that you rate, subscribe, and share. You can support the podcast through PayPal, Cash App, and Venmo. Also, go over to Captain Hunter's Podcast on Patreon page, Captain Hunter's Podcast.
Follow me on Instagram, CPTLHunter, Twitter, CPTLHunter, Captain Hunter's Podcast on Facebook. And that's it, ladies and gentlemen. Until next time, much love and peace.